days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Who are scared by the rise of AI. They're worried that their kids are not going to be able to have jobs someday because AI
will take over. Well, I tell you, AI has been amazing because right now we have more jobs, more people working right now in the United States by far than we ever had before. And outside of the war, and I assumed the economy was going to go down, the stock market would go down 20-25%. It's actually up.
He was supporting legislation that was bipartisan but mainly Republican-backed that would give literal liability protection from state, local, and individual, and most of the federal government, other than the executive branch, to a whole list of top AI companies. And the legislation would create a board of tech heads who would have the liability protection, but none of their competition would. And Trump's now created a board and has nine people on it. Now, that legislation got shot down. He brought it back up last year when he got in office. It failed again, so he signed an executive order and set up a commission. Notice Elon Musk is not on it, ensuring a national policy framework for artificial intelligence.
It seems to be, with Trump going into Iran, no matter who you vote for, you do seem to get a lot of the same foreign and economic policy in my country. You do seem to get military intervention abroad and then kind of the tech and the financial sector dominating the domestic political agenda, no matter who's in there. And that's why all these tech CEOs are clustered around him in China. These are the same people that were with Biden and Harris and censoring their websites to limit conservative speech when they were in. So they obviously view themselves as the actual government, and whoever the president is like a guy giving them a tour.
They might be half right.
I think they're more than half.
How much are you spending, would you say, over the next few years?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think it's probably going to be something like, I don't know, at least $600 billion through 28 in the U.S. Yeah.
It's a lot.
No, it's significant.
That's a lot.
Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And it's it's unimpeachable. The cars have camera, cameras on them. All right, we have a squad car here someplace. But those kind of applications using AI, if we can use AI, and we're using AI to monitor the video, it's not people that are looking at those cameras. It's AI that's looking at the camera. No. You can't do this. It would be like a shooting. That's going to be an event that's immediately, an alarm's going to go off. It's going to be, we're going to have supervision. In other words, every police officer is going to be supervised at all times.
Just by these corporations and their operations with anything they say is AI, that means anything computers, being above the law, that creates a oligopoly of action, an eminent domain and total control, and they can toxic waste, steal water. They've already been caught doing it.
Data centers continue to use public water supplies without authorization. In Georgia, a data center campus consumed nearly 30 million gallons of water without initial payment, while local residents' taps run dry.
And then they are above the law and allowed to have all the energy they want from fossil fuels. But still, they're going to have a lot of the green regulations on the general public, though Trump's backed off some of that.
So-called technology transition rule, which was crazy, forced companies to adopt specific high-cost refrigerants, massively driving up the price of transporting and strong and storing refrigerants and various goods. Today's reforms will deliver significant financial relief.
Us eating beef is bad. Us having a car is bad. You having a space heater is bad. All these jurisdictions banning fireplaces and barbecue pits. That's all bad, even though that's part of the atmosphere and good for the Earth. Methane's good. It's what holds the atmosphere in. We've always had mammals going around and other creatures passing gas. But now we got to shove tubes up the cow's butts in Canada and Europe and capture the methane and pump it into a mine shaft because it's deadly. But AI companies, they can do whatever they want. So when I was the first to say, almost 2 years ago when he's president-elect, I said, this establishes an AI dictatorship. I still support President Trump. People got really mad at me. They said, oh, come on, don't use a term like that. I read the damn legislation.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We are coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network. AlexJonesLive.com is where you go to find us. Share that link. I got a big, big show for you today. And there's so much news, and it really, it's like too much. It's too much. It took me longer than expected to get in today. I ran into, it was like the royal flush of traffic things. A train is the only thing I didn't hit, but it was like comical. It was literally like a bus, an ambulance, road work, a crash, and then like right as I'm about to turn onto the street to get to the studio, a giant line of cyclists, of course, neon wearing cyclists, a herd of them, a murder of cyclists. So anyway, in the you know, 20 minutes it took me to get here, or 20 minutes longer than normal, like five stories broke, and they're all just completely insane. So this is just my life. And so when I'm gathering news to come do the show, I got to determine, like, what's actually worthy of bringing to you people? Because there's a lot of news that, like, it's crazy, but is it worth actually reporting? And I say this because today we have some very strong narratives to explain. And at the end of the day, that's what you have to understand my mission is, or at least that's how I understand my mission here, is to not just tell you the news, but narrate to you the story of humanity and the way that things are going. Because this is, and I the more I think about it, the more important I really think this is the role of the mainstream media. And it has to be the role of the alternative media, establishing narratives in people's minds. The good news is we have the true narrative. We have the actual narrative of what's going on in our countries. If you listen to the left wing, their narrative is very simple. It's also completely wrong, right? It goes something like, the world was at peace. It was all kumbaya and rainbows and unicorns until those dastardly white men showed up and did colonialism everywhere. Stole everything from all of the poor, innocent, virginal black people, and they've just been desperately trying to wrest peace and honor back for the last several hundred years. It's more or less the narrative they run with, and everything is sort of told along that dichotomy, white supremacy versus the oppressed minorities. That's kind of obvious, right? The actual trends, the actual pattern of the world is more or less exactly the opposite. And I really want to drive that home. And I've got some clips today. I've got some videos to show you today that make this narrative abundantly clear. And I'm going to try to lay it out for you in the best way I possibly can. But obviously there's so many various ways that all of this manifests. Today, one of the biggest stories is the fact that Ukraine just basically did a giant terror bombing and killed, reports are, 86 Russian students, young people going to university, in the latest in a series of drone attacks against residential areas of Moscow. And this comes the day after Russia and Belarus are reportedly holding gigantic nuclear war games, which they say the intent of these war games is to send a message to the West. This is not the story I'm talking about here, but what I am talking about is MFA Russia reporting all those responsible for the barbaric terrorist attack on Starblensk will be identified and face inevitable severe punishment. It was a deliberate attack on civilians as German Nazis did. So Ukraine has lost the war, and they lost the war like 2 months into the war. And again, we'll just come out and say, we told you so. We'll pat ourselves on the back, even though it doesn't mean anything, that both with the Ukraine war and the Iranian war, we identified, excuse me, the moment that it went sideways and told everybody, all right, this is it. We can get out now or we can move forward. But from here on out, it's nothing but losses. There is nothing to be gained. Okay, that was, I said that probably 6 days into the Iran war. If we'd ended then, we'd be in a lot better position than we are now. If we'd ended the Ukraine war 2 months into it, we'd be in a lot better position than we are now. But they've killed a million Ukrainians, God only knows how many Russians. And now as the time has come, the clock is winding down. Ukraine has lost, and there's not much more you know, it can really do on the battlefield, it has decided to start deliberately trying to provoke Russia by launching terrorist attacks against its major cities like Moscow. In an obvious, you know, again, just flagrant escalation that has to, like, inevitably will lead to major response by Russia. A Russia who is seemingly doing everything it can, short of, you know, standing on the street corner with a bullhorn to tell the West, we are prepared to use nuclear weapons. We are not going to go down like this. Please stop poking the bear. We do have claws. We will respond. They are literally holding gigantic nuclear weapons drills with Belarus right now, telling everybody, we're doing this as a signal. This, we're sending a signal to the West while we're doing these nuclear exercises. And Ukraine decides to start bombing their nuclear sites and bombing innocent people on the outskirts of town. We're going to talk about Ukraine because Ukraine is sort of the best example, the most stark relief example of the narrative that actually defines the world right now, if you look at it in an objective way, which is the attack on white people, which is the murderous attack on white people that in Ukraine has reached, well, almost comical levels. The only problem, there's nothing comedic about it. It's one of the most horrifying things I've ever heard of happening. Like, it's straight up like a horror story or something. How do I lay this out? How do I lay this out for you? Because first we can go to, I believe I have some of the B-roll of the attacks on Russia. This is like so important. I don't want to just like jump right into it. I could just go to one of these clips, but like, how do I lay this out in a way that is as impactful as it should be? We can go to clip 38 here. Ukraine media, mandatory mobilization of women has now begun. So in addition to kidnapping men off the street of Ukraine, which they've been doing this entire war, but have increased it recently, including like kidnapping fathers in front of their children as they like drop their kid off at school. Kid doesn't realize he's not going to see dad ever again. Possibly if the dad, like most of these recruits, ends up just becoming a target for a drone operator on some godforsaken battlefield that lost strategic importance 2 years ago. And now they're going to do it to women. Now they are forcibly conscripting women in Ukraine to go serve on the front lines. Let's watch.
Сотри свою мать. Сотри, 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 что делают.
There they're pulling the guy.
Ёб твою мать. Боже мой, какой кошмар. Боже мой, какой ужас. Сотри, 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 что делают. Боже, ужас. Посмотри, 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 посмотри.
So that, again, is just some of the brutality with which Ukraine is conscripting men and with their mobilization forces. We do have the video of them bombings. This is what they did last night. We can go to clip 11 and clip 12 here, back to back. Well, 11, 12, and 13. This is the video of them attacking the results here of the attack on the school. And you'll see the, you know, destroyed buildings from the outside in the next clip. So they're doing everything they can to keep this going. Like, it should have ended a long time ago. Should have ended with Ukraine just giving up a bit of its territory that it apparently doesn't even want anyway. Some of these attacks, some of the more egregious attacks Ukraine is waging these days are on Luhansk. You know, the domain that actually wanted to leave and go into Russia and not be in Ukraine. So they're doing absolutely everything they can to keep this going, despite the fact that to keep it going, they're having to rip their own men off the streets and send them to die on the front lines. The real problem, though, is that at this exact same time, They are filling up Ukraine with foreigners, with Indians and Africans, and they're making this a policy, and they're coming in by the boatload, essentially. So they're ripping men off the streets and then literally replacing them with foreign immigrants the moment that they get away, that they grab them. We have images of this. Indians and Pakistanis invade Ukraine while Ukrainian men are sent to die on the front lines. There they are. There's one of the visitors, right? Apparently guest workers are now working with the Ukrainian military recruitment. So Zelensky imports men from India and Bangladesh to cash Ukrainians forcefully like dogs and to send them to the front line to fight against Russia. Men in Ukraine must feel very valued right now. And again, they are ramping up mobilization. We have a video of that. Ukraine ramps up mobilization efforts. RBC Ukraine. Number of Zelensky draft squads in Kiev increased by 40% over the last 3 to 4 months, according to the deputy head of Kiev's TCC. And you can literally see videos of them chasing men through the streets, hunting them down, ripping them off the streets, and sending them to die. Meanwhile, they're actually importing Indian people in order to replace them, straight up. So there you go. So, I mean, I feel like I could just stop there. I feel like I could, like, that's it. What more could you possibly need to know other than the fact that the mobilization forces are kidnapping people while simultaneously importing their replacements? And there's video after video after video of this. And Ukraine, I suppose you could say, is the premier example of this, but it is happening all over Europe in every single European country in almost exactly the same way. Let's go to clip number uh, 24 here. This is a shocking development in the story of Europe. Clip number 24, let's watch.
Soldiers from countries such as Iraq or Afghanistan have massed at small boat launch sites on the Belgian coast, police have revealed. A growing number of military men have been spotted accompanying the boats, making it too dangerous for police to intervene. Local force chief Nicholas Palink said this week, with French authorities taking a stricter approach to monitoring the would-be migrants, small boat smuggling gangs have moved to launch from Belgium, but armed men have rendered authorities impotent to stop the boats.
So that's called an invasion, and the only way to resist that is by fighting them, by actually fighting back when you have armed men like that. In Ireland, it is particularly egregious how this is happening. And again, we go to clip 42 here. Indians and Pakistanis invade Ukraine while Ukrainian men are sent to the front line. Clip 42. Here's some of the Indian men arriving and being interviewed.
Tahur. Okay, so please, так, що?
Тахур, 16-те місце.
Тахур, your place number 16. 16. Over there.
Синг,
Йохіндер?
Yes.
Сир, яке?
19.
Перший, другий. Second floor, up. So, guys, a couple of quick questions. Just say hello.
Hello
to Ukraine. Це наші кандидати з Індії. Вони зараз їдуть до іншого міста своєї роботи. Зараз вони вантажать свої речі. У нас все сьогодні дуже швидко. It's very fast today, right? Unusual morning, unfortunately, for you. Хлопці вже півроку живуть в Україні, вони вже попрацювали на великому підприємстві, але, на жаль, підприємство скорочує зараз своє виробництво.
Yeah, she's saying they're literally, you know, temporary workers that are being imported into Ukraine to take the spot of men who are being sent to die in the front line. And there's more of this. We can go to clip 54 here. Clip 54, again, more images coming out of Ukraine of the Indians taking over. Let's watch. So again, just being imported en masse, and we read the article last week where they're announcing that they need Africans into Ukraine because the population collapse is just that great. While a million Ukrainian men have died and many others have fled, to the point now where you cannot flee if you are of draft age in Ukraine. You cannot leave Ukraine. You know who else just passed a law saying that you can't flee without government permission if you're of draft age? Germany, right? So Germany is passing these laws, reenacting the draft, doing all this stuff, as is the UK, bringing the draft back up. We've been hearing a lot of talk about the draft here in America, too. It was one of the positions that Ed Gowrain differed from Thomas Massie over. And they obviously are trying desperately to kick this off with Russia, although the war in Iran could easily, you know, spiral out as well, with Turkey being a NATO participant. All of these things could get complicated. So now let's go to clip number 30. This is a Irish patriot. An Irish farmer was attempting to get to his own land, and he was suddenly stopped by a phalanx of foreign men in official uniforms. Let's watch. Let's go to 30, clip 30. Let's take it down. We're having some problems with the videos today. The list is all wrong. It's all chaos. Everything, crazy things are happening in my ear, left and right. So we'll get that video, that Irish video of the Irishman being stopped. Trying to make a point here, trying to lay out a case here with all of these various examples. The French police, the being confronted by the armed men, the Irish regular citizens being stopped by official imported migrants who do not speak their language. Of course, we saw last week that the Dutch government was threatening to take women's children away for participating in a protest against the importation of millions of migrants into that country. We can go to clip number 6 here. This is another video, this time from Calais, in France. So this is before they're getting on the dinghies to go to the UK, or maybe they're arriving into France for the first time. God only knows. Let's go to clip number 6. Absolutely every country in Europe is experiencing this endlessly. Men, almost exclusively men, of military age, maybe 3 or 4 women sprinkled in that giant tribe of 50 people, moving into Europe, arming themselves, being given official positions by the government over and above the natives of that country. The natives were at an extremely, like, shockingly high rate, abused, raped, murdered, threatened by these people, are then suppressed by their own government and thrown into jail for disagreeing with the policy. We can go to clip number 18 here. This is inside one of the illegal migrant camps that's now operating. This one is in the UK. Yeah, this is a barracks. Yeah, that's what it looks like when you have a bunch of military-aged men standing around, being given a place to live, being given food to eat, not being given anything. Yeah, these are barracks. This is a militia. This is an army that's being imported. And again, it's happening absolutely everywhere. So far, I've showed you France, UK. We'll show you Ireland there in just a second. Clip 26 here. This is what the UK has come to. This is a council meeting in, I believe, Birmingham, if I'm not mistaken, but one of the cities in the UK that has been taken over. Let's start over and see if we can even understand what the hell's going on here.
Very inclusive, and it has to be. I think all of the institutions must be like a mainstream, inclusive, regardless of race, religion, whatsoever. So you mentioned about women's activities. So as far as this AGM is concerned, did the committee invited any women, respective women from our society? But if you have them, I will not hear any. No.
We all know that this is a male-dominated society. We've got two very prominent female, Salma Ben, on our executive committee, and Sophia Ben from Western. She's a lawyer who is an ethnic and that. But because the male-dominated society...
So I'm not sure if you could tell what was going on there. They're at a council meeting at a city in the UK debating whether or not to let women into the room, to let women participate. So this idea of, like, Europe is going to become Islamicized, it already is. And it's happening in a de facto manner. And this is the way Islam operates. It is a political structure as much as it is a religion, and it's self-enforced by the people voluntarily. So you don't have to have, you know, a power structure enforcing this on people, even though they do, obviously, and the, you know, mosques serve as their central intelligence headquarters. But I remember being in Turkey, sitting with a Muslim friend, and other Muslims were giving him bad looks because I was drinking a beer. And it was, like, threatening, right? That's how this works, right? They get enough people there, suddenly, you know, women, maybe on their own volition, will stop coming around quite so much. And those that do are subjected to abuse, and suddenly you are in a de facto way segregated by gender and, you know, in a world obsessed with feminism, this is going completely unremarked on. Why do you think that is? So I'll show you more on the other side. We have the video of the Irishmen being assaulted on their own land by a bunch of foreigners that don't even speak their language, as well as more about the stabbing suspect in the UK. We'll be right back. So Ukraine is maybe the most obvious example where they're literally ripping the Ukrainian men off the street and then replacing them, including some of the people doing the mobilization that is on the street, kidnapping Ukrainians and taking them to the front line are in fact foreigners from India, Bangladesh, and even Africa. And more videos from Ukraine are being posted. I didn't even grab like a third of as many that I saw. Just search like Indians Ukraine and you see video after video after video of Ukrainian people going, everyone I know has been sent to the front line, and they're like filming. They're like, here's 100 Indian men playing cricket at the park. So all the men of the community have been shipped off to die on the front line, and there are hundreds of Indian people now living where they once were. That's maybe the most egregious and offensive example, but far from even the most like disturbing when you get to the gang rapes and all that sort of stuff going on in the UK. The French government is now apparently not even intervening in anything having to do with the small boats, because the people who are running the small boats have armed themselves because it truly is an invasion and a war. In addition to that, you've got UK boroughs now in areas of the United Kingdom that have completely been given over to the Muslims, to the extent that they don't even allow women to participate in the public meetings anymore. And the mayor of Birmingham can't even read in English. He's literally just a Pakistani. And of course, they're, you know, passing laws in Parliament and elsewhere to make it illegal to criticize Muslims, which again is a de facto form of Sharia law. We can also go, this was a speech. Now, apparently this guy is quoting somebody, but it's hard to tell if that's the case. Clip number 19. This is a Muslim MP, member of parliament in the UK, Imran Hussein, talking about really responding to claims from people in the UK who say, hey, Muslims have to get off our island. They have to leave. We have to send them home. Remigration now. Here's what he has to say.
It's time for many Muslims to leave this country. This is a war. We need to get ready to fight. Deputy Speaker, last weekend's march saw vile racist thugs, national figures openly fanning the flames of hatred against British Muslim communities, saying things like, it's time for many Muslims to leave this country. This is a war. We need to get ready to fight. There are much more vulgar and dangerous statements that I'm unable to repeat in this House. This incitement of hatred and violence against British Muslims in the heart of our capital should worry us all. So can I ask the Leader of the House if he will allow sufficient time for a proper debate to address the dangerously rising levels of Islamophobia, the protections for British Muslim communities, and the consequences for those responsible.
Yeah. So, you know, he's talking about Tommy Robinson's march, right? People waving the Union Jack, patriots. And he's essentially saying, this doesn't belong in our capital city. Our capital city. The Muslim man probably wasn't born there, if I had to guess. Even if he was, he is at most second or third generation. He's saying our capital, there's no place for Islamophobia. There shouldn't be a sizable amount of Muslims in London. That doesn't make any sense. Why are there? That's crazy. These are the people with power. And he says, you know, saying we got to get the Muslims out, this is a war, is somehow incitement. How are you going to get them out without a war? You're going to ask them to leave? They're not going to leave. They're taking over. They're conquering you. They're winning. They have literal barracks full of men ready and willing to fight. And every year or so, sometimes multiple times a year in multiple countries in Europe, they find gigantic weapons caches in mosques. So picture a city like Stuttgart, Germany, with a couple million totally disarmed, totally unarmed, law-abiding German citizens. And within there are planted one, two, three, who knows how many mosques with armories, 10,000 guns, explosives, knives, swords. Like, they are arming, they are preparing. And again, the government-run housing centers are straight-up barracks. Go to clip number 18 one more time, just so we can see again what this looks like inside. That's what it looks like. And these men are not just arriving. For one thing, some of them are given jobs. They're obviously given a higher preference. Obviously, they're all given welfare. They're all given access to the NHS system. They're given housing. I mean, they're given everything. They don't have to do anything for it. It is gifted to them. And when they commit crimes, they're let go. And many of them, in places like Ukraine, they're actually being uniformed and sent out as mobilization officers. And in Ireland, they're also being armed. We've shown you the video many times of the fact that the Irish Garda, their federal national police, are actually recruiting in Pakistan in the Pashtun language. So this is happening. Like, this is a program. They are literally bringing in foreigners and arming them to oppress the natives. This is like the oldest play in the tyrant handbook. You have to stop it. This is outrageous. It absolutely is. So let's go now to clip 30, I believe, right? The Irish Patriot. So an Irish farmer was attempting to gain access to his own farmland when he was greeted with a gang of Middle Easterners, Southeast Asianers, and Africans there in official government uniform, seemingly incapable of even communicating with him, but there to block his path. Let's watch.
believe I'm dead. Tams.
Yeah.
Tams. We're trying to enter into our own land. Right, we're trying to enter into our own land. Look at them. Look at these bikes. Look. Look. They have to be shipped in this morning to do this job. They need to be shipped back out. And hopefully the ship will sink on the way out. Because you're not going to come in and rule this country, I can guarantee you that. Look, not one Irishman. I bet you the Irishman. I bet you one Irishman is flying that drone. And he's down tight in the fight. He's down tight. So he is.
You're very proud of yourself.
Little Andy. Do you know what? Nobody's proud of
me. No, you're not.
You started this. You told me you're the boss. Yeah. And when you assaulted that man, that's it. When you assaulted that man, that's it. Right?
Where are you?
The minute you assaulted him, that's it. It's game over. I'm telling you, it's over. This is not going to end today. It will end today. It will end today. Because I can guarantee you one thing. I'm telling you now. Listen for a minute. The Irish are coming. The Irish are coming. As soon as this goes off. As soon as... Hey! Don't touch him! Don't touch him.
Who did he
have? Right? Now, you're not going to come in and do criminal damage into the land. Hey, watch it. Watch it. James, make sure we get that.
Yeah.
Look at them. Look at them, James. Make sure you get that, James. Make sure you get that. Look at them. Who did
you do that? Come on.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
This is great now. You led order.
We had a talk down there.
Ever since he assaulted that man,
where's the field?
You pulled him to the ground. I don't care.
You saw what I saw, right? Doesn't need any elaboration. This is what's actually happening. The governments of Europe turned against their own people, and they're genociding them, and they're bringing in foreigners to replace them and to oppress them, and they're making it illegal to fight back. It's not that complicated. It's that evil. It's that wicked. I mean, I can't even think of like a biblical, you know, villain that did this type of thing. I'm sure they're in there. But I mean, can't you see, you know, ancient tales of a mad king that, you know, brought in a bunch of foreigners who would only serve him? I mean, it's not even a story. It literally is the oldest thing in the book. The Varangian Guard, right, in the Byzantine Empire. Bunch of giant German Vikings that they brought down. Of course, that was because they were giant and, you know, intimidating and made good bodyguards. But, you know, the benefit on top of that is they had no loyalty to the Romans. So when you told a German bodyguard, hey, go kill that Roman, he didn't care. He went and did it. Unlike the Roman guards who would have objected and said he's a citizen, he has rights. Germany doesn't know about rights. They do what they're told. It's the oldest play in the book, and they're running it right now all over Europe. And then there is the story of Henry Nowak. Henry Nowak is a kid that was killed by the Sikh guy in the UK. We covered the story when it first broke. He was walking home from a night out at about 11 p.m. when he was ambushed by this Sikh guy. And the Sikh are allowed to carry giant 8-inch blade knives in the UK, which, like, I think it's stupid, the knife laws in the UK anyway. But I mean, how outrageous, like, how absurd can things possibly get? The UK has knife bins where you're supposed to go throw knives away. You can't carry around kitchen knives. They'll send the police to you if you order a cutlery set on Amazon. It is the most paranoid knife-phobic community of all time. And then the Sikhs are like, oh, but these gigantic machetes are our culture. And they're like, that's fine then. That's fine. If you're gonna have these laws, have them for everybody. Regardless, the Sikh guy runs up behind this kid, stabs him in the back with his giant 8-inch knife. The kid's running away, leaving a trail of blood, tries to climb a fence. He's being stabbed in the legs by the guy as he tries to escape. Apparently, you know, the police are coming. The Sikh guy's mother shows up and takes the knife to go hide it, to go conceal the evidence and help her son get away with the murder. The Sikh guy is on CCTV camera unrolling his own turban and, like, pulling it off. So then when the cops come, he says, that kid called me a packy and unrolled my turban. And so we got in a fight. The kid is saying, I'm bleeding, I got stabbed. The audio recording at the time has the police saying, I don't think so, mate. I don't think so. They handcuff the kid, arrest him for racial aggravation, and leave him in handcuffs to bleed to death. He dies in the gutter and on the street right there. Now, this is the latest in a very long line of instances in the UK where fear of racism has directly led to death, including the Manchester Arena bombing, in which a security guard said he saw the guy, he thought he looked suspicious, saw that he had a backpack, and then didn't approach him because he didn't want to be called racist. In this case, a young man, 18 years old, left to die on the ground because his murderer said he called me a bad name. And maybe the most despicable part about this, I mean, it's all despicable. There's no more despicable part than anything. But the Metro, a giant mainstream news outlet in the UK, reports it as if the murderer's story is true. The headline they go with is, Sikh murder suspect stabbed student Henry Nowak after he was called a packy and had turban pulled off. Never happened. They know that that never happened. Yet it's still being reported that way. It's still being reported to give credence to the fake story that the murderer told to get away with the murder. So I'm going to go now to a video of Henry Nowak. Clip number two. Here's a little compilation of the young man, the latest victim of diversity. Now, I want to remind you, When a guy went crazy in London and stabbed three people, two of them happened to be Jewish, not an attack on Jews. The other guy was Muslim, so he stabbed a Muslim guy and two Jews. The newspapers ran headlines that said, two Jews stabbed. They don't even mention the Muslim. Keir Starmer and like 100 British politicians come together for a memorial service for the two guys who get stabbed. Neither one of them died. So I don't know what you're doing a memorial service over. But they gave speeches and they gave tens of millions of dollars to the security of the Jewish community. They promised extra police patrols wherever Jewish people lived. Keir Starmer gave address after address after address talking about the threat of anti-Semitism and what his government would be doing going above and beyond to guarantee the protection of the Jewish people. Meanwhile, he has not mentioned Henry Nowak once. Before a few stories like this misrepresenting it came out. No stories in the, you know, major UK press. And Keir Starmer has completely ignored it, been totally silent on it. Let's go to the video. This is the life that was snuffed out and is going completely ignored by the UK authorities. Let's watch. The stars, look how they shine for you. Everything you do. Yeah, they were all. Again, you know, the details, the actual impact of this stuff gets lost. When you just hear the stats, when you just hear, you know, you hear it mentioned or whatever. But every one of these instances is not just a single person, but an entire family, an entire community being absolutely and completely destroyed forever. And who knows what will happen to this guy. Maybe, you know, maybe he'll get let off in 6 months. Do you remember when they were arresting people for tweeting things out during the Southport riots, and they're arresting so many people they had to actually establish a new court to handle and expedite, they said, all of these speech crimes, and they were so overloading the prisons they decided to let prisoners out, starting with the murderers. You remember one of the prisoners released was a man who had murdered a British kid with a machete, chopped him up with a machete and murdered him. He only spent 6 months in prison because they had to make room for all of the free speech violations that they were imprisoning. I don't know what it takes to get it through to people, what's actually going on here, but like, it is overwhelming. It is relentless. It is everywhere. It is nonstop. It is every single day. And it's not going to end until you end it. That's the thing you got to realize. There's nobody coming. There's nobody that's going to rescue us. There's nobody that's going to swoop in. There's no appealing to people like this for a equal piece of the pie. It's kill or be killed. This is the world that we live in. It's grow or shrink, consume or be consumed, eat or be eaten. That's the law of nature. That's just how it is. So we got to realize that, wake up to it. We do not have much time. The hour is very late. So how do we get to this point? How did we arrive at this inexplicably suicidal societal construct? In a lot of ways, white people have been bred to be like dodo birds, right? Dodo birds didn't start off retarded. They were normal birds at one point, but they were kept in a safe place. They were protected from predators. To the point where they lost the ability to recognize predators. And the stories of the humans finding the dodo birds, you know, uncontacted, no predators for millions of years, had evolved out of self-defense. They could walk up and just pluck a dodo bird off the nest, wring its neck, and walk away. And the dodo birds in the nest next to it would just watch them do it and not respond. They would have no idea how to respond. That's white people these days. We're watching. It's our neighbors, one by one, will be picked off and killed. We're going, what? That's not supposed to happen. Why is that happening? Don't go the way of the dodo birds. They're extinct now. And this story, I think, explains this better than perhaps I could have. Three boys avoid jail after rape of two teenage girls. Three teenagers have avoided jail after the rape of two girls in Hampshire, UK. Southampton Crown Court heard two girls were raped in two separate incidents in Fordingbridge, with the first attack taking place on the 26th of November 2024 and the second on 17th of January 2025. A 15-year-old boy was sentenced to youth rehabilitation order for 3 years and 180 days of intense supervision and surveillance for the rape of each of the two girls and the two indecent images charges. The court heard that he'd been diagnosed with ADHD as well as longstanding anxiety. Wow. Poor boy. A second 15-year-old was given the same sentence for three charges of rape against each of the two victims and four counts of taking indecent images in relation to the filming of the incidents. So literally filmed their gang rape knife point attack against this woman. None of them are going to jail. Two of them are going to youth rehabilitation centers for 18 months. The other one was let off with supervised release. And do you want to know why? Do you want to know why the judge gave these inexplicably lenient sentences? He basically said it's because they behaved well in the court. They were nice. They were polite. They sat with their hands in their lap and listened politely, as if that has anything to do with your capability to rape an innocent girl and destroy her life. Multiple innocent girls. By the way, they apparently got caught for the first one, but like nothing happened to them. So, of course, they go off and do it again. But I feel like that judge, that sort of is the answer, is like white people especially, and I'm sorry to say it, no offense to the good boomers, to the based boomers, but boomers especially have this idea that it's just like, well, they said they won't do it, so they won't do it. Sure, we'll give welfare to literally every Somali that walks up and says they have an autistic kid. Who would lie about such a thing?
Harrison, you're being naive here, okay?
I'm being naive. I'm trying to rail against the naivety.
It's Cloward and Piven. These judges know they're destroying society. They want to undermine it. They enjoy the murder. It's the cowardly, passive-aggressive way that cowards execute. It's all from Australia to Europe to here. They know exactly what they're doing.
Do you think so? Because I got this other video because I was going to connect.
No, I mean, some of them are useful idiots, but the ones doing it know what they're doing.
Yeah.
The ones oh, yeah, they know. You don't think Guerra knows if you're Hispanic or black, you murder whoever you want? You don't think they don't know? No, this is their justice. This is their war.
What explains it? This is what I don't get, because I got this other video. I'll go to this when we get back from the break. But it's a woman who is a social justice warrior, woke CEO. She ran EcoMap. It was a country that stands against systemic racism, bigotry, and the police state that criminalizes black bodies. And she ends up opening the door for a guy who beats her to death with a brick. Because he's like, hey, let me in. I'd like to come in, please. I belong in your building. She said, okay, come on in.
You're not like Owen used to say. You like it? Do you like me coming in occasionally?
I do like when you bust it. It's exciting.
Yeah. No, I saw the video of this Black Lives Matter lady inviting the killer in. No, she's totally naive. I agree.
That's what I mean.
That's the ground level cannon fodder. I'm saying the higher up leftists admit Clark Piven. This is all their plan.
Know exactly what they're doing. I still don't get. It's still their country being destroyed. You're wrong, Charlotte. Alex says you're wrong. Hey, by the way, folks, I haven't plugged yet this hour. I'm going to tell you about this on the other side. But I love this wallet. I got this wallet yesterday. It is the RFID Freedom Shield wallet at thealexjonesstore.com. I cannot tell you how much I love this wallet. I'm not kidding. I was literally just sitting there like staring at it last night for like 10 minutes. Just like, it's so beautiful. It's the most beautiful wallet I've ever owned. Get it now. And at a certain point, you know, it really doesn't matter whether it's on purpose or out of stupidity. It's the same thing happening in every single country at every single level. At a certain point, it doesn't matter what the motivation. The motivation of the Muslims is because they're getting stuff and they're gaining stuff. Yet they're allied with the hardcore feminists. I don't really care how they justify it internally. It's the same motivation, ubiquitous across the entire Western world. And it is suicidal and it is killing us. And it is this combination of the, you know, dodo bird moron idiots that are just allowing themselves to be killed, and the vipers and the wolves and the hawks that are just mercilessly taking advantage of the ignorance, naivety, and complicity of the Europeans. It's horrifying. And when I say Europeans, I don't mean people in Europe. I mean people of European ancestry, because the exact same thing is happening in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and Greenland and America and everywhere else in the entire world where you can find white people. So have you seen South Africa lately? So we could talk about that. I could spend the whole show on that. I got a video of Julius Malema, head of the EFF, high guy up in, you know, South African politics. He's saying they still need reparations. It's been 30 years of black rule. The country is in a state of precipitous collapse, and they're saying we need more because we still are owed more because it's still not enough. It'll never be enough, folks. So I want to go to this video. This is Cape Cod Concerned Citizens posted this. Legal Citizens First. The Barnsdale County Assembly of Delegates met yesterday to discuss illegal immigration and legal immigration. Here's an absolute patriot standing up against them. Let's watch.
First, and then the gentleman in the blue shirt. And would you please tell us your name and what community you're from?
Yes, my name is Andrew DeRogers. I'm born and raised on Cape Cod. I appreciate that many people here have different points of view, and that's fine. Many of them are very well-spoken. Many of them are polite. I'm not going to be. I am that taxpayer that several of the people who sat up here and spoke are talking about. What is on the line is very simple. It is a declaration of your allegiance either to the American citizen the legal taxpaying American citizen or the chosen community of foreign nationals who have been trafficked into this country for purposes of census data, for purposes of seats, for purposes of power, and for purposes of taxes. I am sick to effing death of being lectured about compassion, about patience and understanding. I have lived here all my life, and I have been required for all 40 years of that life to obey the law and follow the rules. There will be no Social Security check for me when I can't work anymore. I have never once received any of the benefits that have been spoken of here. Nobody is beating down my door to help me fix up my house so that it doesn't collapse on me or lower the cost of the electricity that I have to pay.
I'm going to interrupt it here because I went too long to throw to it. I got to play that full video. It's too good to cut off. I can't do the guy the disservice. I was going to say just tack on the full one when we upload it, but I got to show you the full thing. I got to give the guy his due because it's such a powerful speech, and it's how everybody should be feeling right now. And the fact that it's Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, like the most idyllic location in America since it was founded in the 1600s. Why are there any foreigners there? Like, when I have guests over to my house, I don't give them the master bedroom and my car, right? Can we have some semblance of normalcy? Like, okay, you can come, but, like, you can't have the prime real estate in all the states in the union. Are we kidding? Why are we giving up our country? It's absurd.
Yes, my name is Andrew DeRogers. I'm born and raised on Cape Cod. I appreciate that many people here have different points of view, and that's fine. Many of them are very well spoken. Many of them are polite. I'm not going to be. I am that taxpayer that several of the people who sat up here and spoke are talking about. What is on the line is very simple. It is a declaration of your allegiance either to the American citizen, the legal taxpaying American citizen, or the chosen community of foreign nationals who have been trafficked into this country for purposes of census data, for purposes of seats, for purposes of power, and for purposes of taxes. I am sick to effing death, to death of being lectured about compassion, about patience and understanding. I have lived here all my life, and I have been required for all 40 years of that life to obey the law and follow the rules. There will be no Social Security check for me when I can't work anymore. I have never once received any of the benefits that have been spoken of here. Nobody is beating down my door to help me fix up my house so that it doesn't collapse on me or lower the cost of the electricity that I have to pay. I don't get health insurance. I can't afford it. But I am punished by this state for not being able to afford it so that people who are in this country illegally can benefit from it and go see the doctor whenever they want. And that is a fact. And I am sick of it. I am not an ununderstanding individual. I am not an uncompassionate individual. But my generosity has been abused, and I am sick of it. I am sick of being treated as an indentured servant to foreign nationals in my country and in my community. And I don't give a damn whose feelings that hurts. So you can either approve this measure and show legal, law-abiding, tax-paying citizens that they do not matter to you, or you can reject it and show them that you are listening. Those are the only two options. And for the record, I traveled abroad to a foreign nation, and you would not believe the amount of documentation I was required to have on me at all times and show whenever anybody asked. And you can bet your ass if I broke their laws, they would have nailed my ass to the wall. And I was very well behaved over there, and I was very respectful to the people because I was a guest in their country. I wasn't do anything. Thank you.
So that's it. I mean, that's it. That's brilliant, brilliantly said. That's what we need more of, and that's the proper framing. Right? He says, when I go to other countries, I behave myself. I comport myself with their laws. I comport myself with our laws in my own country. Why are foreigners given a free pass? They should be held to a higher level of scrutiny. And is all of this downstream of the lie of refugee asylum-seeking status? Is that because that just gets applied to everybody. Now, every immigrant is just de facto a refugee, an asylum seeker. None of them deserve asylum. None of them are refugees. None of them. Not a single one. There are laws dictating who is and is not a legal refugee or legal asylum seeker. The Biden administration just circumvented that and just said, well, as long as you're applying, then we have to let you in. It shouldn't exist. It shouldn't be a thing. It was only implemented, supposed to be temporarily. And this is the thing about, like, everything that we're facing now are either just laws that aren't being enforced, like every law about requiring immigrants to actually be loyal to the country and not support socialism and not support communism. We have laws on the books about that. They aren't enforced. Or total misuse of the laws, work around loophole-ism, where they're just, oh, yeah, just say the magic word, say open sesame, and now you're an asylum seeker. Say, I fear for my life. Just like the UK got caught running a scheme where they were getting kickbacks for sending in migrants and telling them, say you're gay. Just say you're gay. They can't prove it. I mean, I saw a video. Should have grabbed it. I never grabbed it. But it was an Irish guy walking down the street and interviewing a guy. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm an asylum seeker. And they're like, really? From where? He's like, I think he said, like, Ethiopia. And they're like, well, why do you get asylum from Ethiopia? And he's like, well, I'm gay. I'm like, oh, you're gay. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And anybody come with you? Yeah, my wife and my kids. Oh, okay. We couldn't figure this scheme out earlier. So, of course, they're doing that same thing in America as well. And it's you would not treat other people this way. You would not go into other countries and break their laws. You would not demand entry to other countries. Why would you accept other people doing that? And that's why I do think it goes down to like the dodo bird mindset of good people like that law-abiding Cape Cod citizen. And by the way, Cape Cod, it's a beautiful part of the country, but it has major problems too. It's like one of the biggest epicenters of like heroin overdoses and stuff. It's not, you know, because every place in the country will have lower classes, working classes, and the upper class. The bifurcation that is increasing means that the lower classes are just devolving into misery and drug addiction and disease and chaos, and the upper class is just shifting away and putting up fences and, you know, decreasing their proximity to the lower classes. So obviously that's just going to be the situation everywhere. And it's always lower class is going to be hurt by the illegal immigrants and the lower classes being addicted to drugs and, you know, unproductive is a symptom of a problem that should be fixed. They should get help. They should be the ones who receive the money or the assistance of the government. It is stolen from them and given to foreigners because it's about the ethnic replacement of white people. It's not complicated. It's not hard. By the way, the reason why white people are being targeted is because white people have the history, the will, and the capability to stand up against tyranny. It's all about control at the end of the day. And the good, compliant white people who will go along or serve the enemy or, you know, proceed with the destruction are rewarded and uplifted and guaranteed a place in society. But anybody that's willing to stand up gets cut down. And it's not just Europeans alone. It's almost exclusively European, but Japan has been subjected to this as well. In the first 5 months of 2026, 9 major shrines, temples, and other religious centers have burned across Japan. 9 in 5 months. Places that have stood, in some cases, for over 1,000 years. Places that survived the saturation bombing campaigns of World War II. And this comes mere months after Japan first welcomed in its first shipment of tens of thousands of Bangladeshi Muslims. You think it's a coincidence? And of course, the agreement to allow in those Bangladeshi Muslims was facilitated by American corporate interests like Palantir and Miriam Adelson. Suga Shrine in Fukuoka. I'm not going to try to read all of these, but January 15th, February 13th, 7th, 20th, April 24th, and 27th, May 6th, May 16th, May 20th. So practically like clockwork, every week or every 2 weeks, a new shrine, sacred places that have stood for hundreds, some over 1,000 years, have been burned to ash. This person says, I'm not a politician, I'm not an activist, I'm just ordinary Japanese who loves this country. Every time I see another irreplaceable piece of our history and culture go up in flames, I feel a quiet fear. Japan was supposed to be the one place where this kind of thing never happened. When did our temples and shrines start burning one after another? It's a universal attack on humanity, folks. And it's not the Muslims alone. It's all of them. I mean, it's all of it. It's a consortium of the worst people. And if they'll use radical Muslims to do it, they'll do that. If you're more susceptible to, you know, just having your quality of your country degraded by, you know, importation of just actual workers, not necessarily violent people, they'll do it that way. They'll get you on climate change, like whatever. Whatever's your vulnerability, that's what they'll target. Doesn't matter to them. Doesn't matter what the reason is behind it. And this is what I mean, the dodo bird aspect, the learned helplessness aspect of it. It's utterly pernicious. And the only way to really fight back against it is to stand up like that guy from Cape Cod and just insist that you be respected and that your country be respected. Because if you don't, like, you're just an idiot. It's like, it's really not complicated. It's really not sophisticated. It really is that simple. You really do just have to treat your country like your home and your nation like your family. And everything becomes abundantly clear why all this is happening, or like how this is all happening. So like I said, Cape Cod, we have illegal immigrants in Cape Cod of all places. Why? Just why? Why are they there? Like, if you were designing things, you're like, hey, we got a bunch of immigrants. We can't reject them. We got to put them somewhere. Where are you going to put them? In America. And you can put them anywhere in America. Are you going to put them in Cape Cod? You going to put them on Martha's Vineyard? You can put them on Catalina Island, right? Are you kidding me? Do you know we have endless fields of grass and sand that would love to have people on it? They can go there. That's what I mean. It's like, it's not just like, you know, if they're really asylum seekers, if the motivation was really like we have to help them because they're going to die if we don't, then fine, you can put them somewhere. It's like, hey, you know, the new suburb outside of Houston's better than anywhere they're from. Like, just put them there or wherever. But the fact that they're like, no, we're going to put them in the best places in America. It's on purpose. Like I said, I'll have guests over in my house. Things spend the night. They're not taking the master suite, right? Are you kidding? Why? You think be my best friends. I'm sleeping in my room. What are you talking about? Because the thing is, it's offensive for this to be, you know, subjected to it. Like, it should be offensive to all of us, the level of superiority and you know, the fact they feel like they deserve this stuff. You don't deserve anything. It is utterly infuriating to me. And as somebody who loves Cape Cod and has been there quite a bit, very sad. I'm very sad about the prospect of it going away, because it absolutely will. Because right now, it's a wonderful place and it's beautiful and it's quaint and it's, you know, humble and it's white and it's all white people. And it's practically nothing but white people. That's an intrinsic part of it. You cannot, you know, extricate that part of that. And it's actually one of the places, that place in Ipswich in Massachusetts. If you've ever read anything by Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft, he sets a lot of stuff in Ipswich. I have family in Ipswich. It's one of the most beautiful towns in America. And it was one of the places that it hit me for the first time probably 10 years ago. Because I was, you know, I was, yeah, probably like 25, 20, something like that. And it was one of the first places where I looked around and I was like, this place is amazing. My wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, was like, you know, I can't believe places like this exist. I remember for the first time being like, yeah, white people. Hell yeah, white people. This is awesome. And it's because white people built it. Because it's got the history. It's like you're walking over a bridge from the 1600s. And up until that point, you know, I'd been raised in America. I'd been raised as a 90s kid, watching freaking Sister to Sister and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'd never thought about race in my life. But then from Donald Trump, the 2016 election, the constant harping on race, even before that, the Black Lives Matter crap, the Trayvon Martin crap, the idea of race being, you know, pushed into your brain over and over and over and over again. And so you start to think about things in a racial paradigm, in a racial dimension. And when you start doing that, you start finding, as a white person, I look around places that I think are wonderful and love them a lot and go, huh, wonder if it's a coincidence that they're all places that are almost exclusively white people, or if that's just an accident. I've told the other story. Being in Colorado, another place, beautiful and white as the driven snow, at least it was for a while, where I had my non-white friend, I was talking to my non-white friend on the phone, walking around a public tennis court, and I'm talking to him on the phone, I'm going, there's just tennis rackets sitting out. I'm looking around going, I don't think these belong to anybody. I think the club just leaves $250 tennis rackets out on the rack. And my friend is like, yeah, dude, because it's white people there. And this was even before then. This was before racial consciousness, when I had to have a non-white person tell me why things were so safe in Colorado. I didn't realize it at the time. So it's one of these things that you see these places and you just know their character is not going to survive. It's just not. Because for one thing, the white people are obsessed with making everybody else feel welcome. And so it's just like, you know, right now on Cape Cod, last time I was there, saw a very wonderful production of like a Shakespeare in the Park play. And you know that right now the money that Cape Cod brings in is, yeah, there we go. We're doing it, folks. It is white boy summer. It's very much white boy summer. And we'll get into the Chud story here in just a second. That was our official kickoff of white boy summer. But all those, you know, the funds for, you know, our, you know, artistic endeavors that the city does. Again, if you go to Cape Cod, you'd understand, right? It's literally like craft fairs and Shakespeare in the Park and this weekend is the bring your, you know, Labrador to the beach weekend or your golden retriever to the beach. And you see 1,000 golden retrievers running down the beach. You go, this is the whitest thing I've ever seen. And I say that with glowing pride. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. You ever seen Jaws? That takes place in Cape Cod. And so you know that what's going to happen to those, to the funds that are funding the little arts, you know, and crafts fairs that are all about antiques and, you know, the maritime culture of the old Cape Cod lobster boats. And like, what do you think is going to happen as that stuff starts to go, well, you know, we want to spend some of that, just a little bit of that money on the Sikh Street Festival this year. So we don't quite have enough for that other thing we used to do. And you know, it's only fair that the Afghans get a street festival of their own as well, right? We want to embrace multiculturalism. And multiculturalism crowds out culture. It drains it and destroys it. So it's a bummer. It's a bummer. Cape Cod's just not going to exist anymore in a little while. It already is getting bad. And the other thing is that it's not just that these places, these really, you know, nice historic places just happen to be where these things happen. I think they're targeted. What is this? I think it's Plymouth, right? Plymouth is the city where the Puritans landed, right? Where the Mayflower landed. I believe it's Plymouth now. The entire city is like a gay theme park. Where did they land right before Plymouth? They landed somewhere. They were there for about 3 months, and then they went to Plymouth Rock. Maybe I'm mixing. Ask if Plymouth is gay. That'll give you the answer. Provincetown. That's what I'm thinking of. They call it P-Town, Provincetown. And it's literally like a gay theme park. It's like the whole city is gay. And there's something very insidious about it. For one thing, because you've got right in the middle of the city this giant memorial to the Puritans. Left England, left the Netherlands, came to start a new heaven on earth in America where the church was the state. And for years, citizenship wasn't even a concept. It was membership of a church, of a congregation. Yeah, Provincetown, the gayest town in America. That happens to be where the gay culture congregates. Just happens to be at a spot of sort of sacred puritanical history. Just happens to arrive there. And especially with the gay stuff, I find it particularly insidious because of the innocence with which it is put forward. Like you go to Provincetown and it's like a typical beach town, and you'll have like, oh, the old timey candy store. And it's like, okay, you go into the old timey candy store, and sure, it'll have rainbows and it'll have, you know, everyone accepted signs, but it'll also have like leather thongs hanging on the wall. It'll also have like dildos on shelves. And you're just like, why are they acting like this is innocent? Like, it's this weird, like, yeah, this is probably there. That memorial is amazing. It's this beautiful memorial right in the center of town to the Pilgrims, to the Puritans, to the risks they took, to the sacrifices that they experienced, to the brutality that they withstood to carve out a little, you know, church kingdom on the rocky shores of New England. And now it has become a giant gay parade all day, every day. They literally do this every day. And again, they treat it as if it's like, oh, it's like a fun, like, innocent thing. And it's like, if it was innocent, why are there masks? Why are there handcuffs and masks and leather thongs on display? There's nothing innocent about it. There's something like very disturbing. So I don't think it's a coincidence that these places are being targeted. I think they're targeted as a symbol, as a signal, as a act of conquering, as an act of humiliation and submission to their worldview, which is against ours and at odds with ours. And this, to me, again, the saddest thing in the world is seeing like the normally pretty conservative boomer people just being like, it's so fun. This place is so gay. And it's like, I have to shield my kids' eyes from the stuff they're displaying in the store. This is disgusting. Yeah, we got to be, you know, this is what I mean. I don't know what we're going to do, folks. I don't know what we're going to do about this country, about this world, about the people. They're supposed to be on our side. They're supposed to be our brethren. They're supposed to be our countrymen that are just reveling. It's an orgy of destruction. They are dancing their way off a cliff. They're following the Pied Piper, and they're calling us idiots and bigots for just recognizing the symptoms of a collapsed, decaying society like Sodom. Cocaine is life. Everybody wants a little life. Cocaine is life. Everything that makes you live a nice. Here it is, folks. The Memorial Day celebration in 1976. This is what America was like. We sure have progressed, haven't we? sure looks a bit different. I mean, everybody gets this was better, right? It was better back then. Like, everybody can see that. It's not exactly complicated. How did we get away from this? Where did it go? Was it capitalism? Did capitalism do it? Because this is a commercial for the largest corporation in the world, Coca-Cola. I don't think it was capitalism that did this to us. Was it racism? Was it white people being too racist? Is that what happened? We got more racist over time. There you go. There you go. A little compare and contrast. 1976 to 2026. Gee, what's gone on? What's happened to us? I mean, can anybody seriously watch that parade from 1976 and just be like, blech, ugh, I hate it. You're lying. You're lying or you're jealous. It's the only answer. And I saw people actually yesterday, because I'm not kidding. I love this wallet. I love this wallet. And I literally was just like, I took a picture of it because I was just like, this is so cool. And I posted it online. And I had people say, you know, who cares about 1776? Who cares about America? It's lost. And I hear that sentiment going around. That sentiment only exists on the internet, first of all. And it's the symptom of a life lived in a closet. Not because they're gay, but because they don't go outside. They don't talk to people. They don't go to events. It still exists. I'm not trying to black pill here. Talking about Cape Cod, one of the biggest white pills in the world is going to a Cape Cod Little League baseball game a couple years ago. There, because it straight up felt like I was transported back to 1776 or 1976 rather. Just total patriotism, red, white, and blue. Kids running around. It was beautiful. It was amazing. And I had people comment on that saying, basically, America's dead. I haven't heard Nick Fuentes saying this. The Republic is dead. You know, get over it. And he's talking about moving to an empire, which I don't necessarily totally disagree with, considering the fact that we do not have a republic right now. We have degenerated into democracy of the worst form, and we got to do something to get back on track. Regardless, 1776 is about the promise of America. It's about what America was meant to be and what it's going to take to get us back there. And if you want to never get back there, then believe that we'll never get back there. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you want it, you'll get it, is how this works. If you want to fight for America, if you want to reestablish our values, if you want to reclaim our homeland, then that's what we got to do. If you want to believe it's over, then it is. And that's how it works. And the promise of America is beautiful and was beautiful and remained beautiful for a very long time. And it's really only been in this last 50 years, since 1976, thereabouts, that things have gone completely off the rails, completely downhill, and it's not a mystery as to why. It's liberalism, it's white guilt, it's racial grievances and racial politics, it's exploitation by foreign powers, it's law upon law upon law being piled on top to solve a problem that laws created in the first place. It's an abandonment of the values that built our country in the first place as well. And it's no wonder that we're in a state of abject collapse. But also, don't forget, and I know this is a little bit boomer-coded, I'll admit, but especially when you are reading about what's going on in Israel, what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on literally everywhere else that's not first world. And this country is still truly amazing. Truly incredible. And we do sort of get used to it. There is this normalization that occurs where you take for granted the fact that you're not having leaflets dropped on you at 1 a.m. saying, gather what you can and flee, you have 30 minutes before your house explodes. And that's the lucky ones, right? The unlucky ones simply wake up to a ringing in their ears and their entire family's dead. The real unlucky ones get killed in the rubble, buried there as they die slowly over days. And anybody tries to come to rescue, you get sniped by the Israelis. There are a lot worse places to be in this world. You could be in Mexico, where if you cross the wrong gangster, you're going to end up decapitated hanging over a telephone pole. I understand that people are black-pilled about the direction America's going. I understand they're black-pilled about the condition America's currently in, because if you took anybody from the 50s or the 60s or the 70s and brought them to 2026, I mean, it's a dystopian hell world. It would feel like some sort of sci-fi movie about the follies of man and how to, you know, the dire consequences of everything we've experienced over the last several decades. We're in the state of collapse. I'm not, you know, overly optimistic about any of that. However, the hopelessness, the beating you down, the making you discredit or hate your history, because that's really what's going on here, is people are being taught basically America as it exists now was inevitable. So really the founding fathers were basically dumb to start this in the first place. That's the implication, right, of being an American, being a supposed patriot, you know, being a white Christian European and like wanting to fight for that, and then going, but the founding fathers are stupid. It's stupid to celebrate 1776. You're completely off the mark. You've gone totally wrong somewhere. That's our history. It's real. It's what gave us everything that we currently have. We should honor it and uplift it and view it through a deliberately optimistic lens. We've talked about it a lot before. George Washington cut down the cherry tree. That's a fact. I don't care if it's true or not. It's a fact, and you have to believe it. George Washington cut down a cherry tree to try out his new axe as a child. When his father got mad, he didn't hesitate. He stood up and said, "I chopped down that cherry tree." And that's true. It's an absolute fact. And you have to believe that if you're an American. That's my perspective. These are the myths that define our character. What do you think the Israeli version of that story would be? George Washington chops down the cherry tree and then sells his dad the wood. Denies it. Blames it on the slave kid. I don't know. They don't have the same character we do, though. They didn't go out of their way to define themselves and their nation on the promise of honesty, even unto self-sacrifice. Not such a thing in that culture. So I don't know what you're trying to build, but if it's at odds with George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, I don't want anything to do with it. Everything that we're pursuing here was embodied by those guys who created a brilliant and amazing form of government that has been systematically destroyed over 250 years. And the thing is, they knew that and they put in solutions for that, and we didn't take them. We didn't follow them. We didn't do what we were supposed to. You know, Thomas Jefferson said, like, every 20 years, they'd have to remake the government. That was their intention. And in this bizarre inversion of what was intended was that sort of our morals and our character and our nationhood would remain consistent, more or less. It would maybe slowly change, but remain consistent. But as modernity brought new technology and developments and more people and new forms were necessary, then the idea was that we could reform our government into a new structure to continue our traditional morality in whatever new form the future required. We've done the opposite, where we have retained the form of government, like breaking these laws is the worst thing in the world, like changing the rules by which we play the board game called government is just anathema. We can't possibly do anything like that. We have to do it incrementally by, you know, writing laws that are filled with pork and never get passed in the way they're supposed to. It's ridiculous. It's completely a misfit. So we've kept the form of government, but our morality has completely inverted and been deliberately changed. Again, the best symbol of this process that's occurred is the plaque on the Statue of Liberty, right? The Statue of Liberty, given to America by France, not the government of France, the government of America, but the people of France who paid out of their own pocket to fund the statue, and then people in America paid out of our own pocket to build the base of the statue. They build the statue. The purpose of the statue is shining out. It's shining out into the harbor. It's the American liberty facing France and shining her torch and leading the way. It is an outward projecting sentiment that the Statue of Liberty is expressing. Then all of a sudden, an activist, a Jewish woman who I guess was thankful to America for rescuing her from the Nazis or whatever pogrom it was when she came over. I think it was earlier than that, right? It was the late 1800s. She comes over and puts a plaque on it and completely inverts the symbolism. Now, instead of being a symbol of projecting our values outward into the world, it becomes a symbol of welcoming the world into America to live the life that they want to and the way that they want to. It is a literal 180-degree inversion of the intended symbolism, and yet the vast 99.9% of Americans have no idea and think that the Statue of Liberty was always intended as a welcoming symbol, welcoming migrants in to New York Harbor. So just take that in symbolic form, and it's everything. There was a deliberate redefinition of what America meant, and it mostly happened around the 1960s. When instead of a nation, a European nation of pioneers and founders, you know, going out in the wilderness and building something to prove that human liberty is possible and human beings are capable of living without tyrannical instruction, and it inverted it into a safe harbor for all of the world's detritus. Great. Great. In the 60s, obviously, this was in service of progressing the civil rights movement. And I'll explain this a few times, but it's worth revisiting because, again, the question is, why are people like this? Why is America like this? Why is Europe like this? Why are we like dodo birds? Why do we believe the scam artists aren't going to scam us? Why do we welcome people in who despise us? Why are we such fools and suckers and ignorant, naive children? Why? Why is this happening? And the fact is, we've had it very, very good for a very long time, and it's a natural consequence of that, you know, the comfort that the boomers felt, the, you know, safeness that they felt. It was sort of a form of white supremacy, of believing that your culture and your country could never really be at threat. But it's also really at the heart of it, it is actually our liberalism. It actually makes perfect sense because it actually is sort of the willingness of Western culture to change, to evolve, to migrate when necessary to a newer form. It's pretty unique in Western culture, right? You can think about Japan being basically exactly the same for thousands of years until they saw how great the Europeans were at doing things and went, all right, we're going to open up so you guys can come tell us how to build industry. And so they did, and they did an amazing job. But China was the same way, right? Sort of rigid, sort of stuck in the same form for thousands of years. No, you know, major developments. Islam, of course, there are still people living in the way they did in the 1300s. It's never really developed in terms of like human rights and women's rights and all this sort of stuff. Now we look at this stuff as suspect because it's gone so far. But the thing is, that's because it's a vulnerability that's taken advantage of by bad actors, and we don't have the immune system to detect and defend against that. So because our society is not rigid, is not calcified, is able to absorb and incorporate new developments, it means that we're constantly going through a process of evolution, and when certain vulnerabilities are opened up, bad people come in and try to accelerate the transformation faster than it's naturally going, and it makes everything completely and objectively worse. You can see this with feminism, and you can see this with the civil rights movement. You can see it with a lot of movements throughout American history, where for feminism especially, it was mostly a matter of technology and of like civilizational technology that allowed women to not be required to be housewives, right? Taking care of a house, it's a hell of a lot of work, especially if you're washing clothes by hand, right? The washing machine literally freed up like hours a day for women. And it's not like it was optional. It's not like, you know, the husbands out there were just like, I'm going to make my wife wash clothes all day because I don't want her going outside. Well, it was a communal activity anyway, so that doesn't even, but the point was like, if you didn't have a wife there constantly upkeeping things, you had disease, you had rats, you had filth, like it could get really bad. And it's like, it's really shocking how recent it was that we like got out of that mode. I was looking through an old National Geographic magazine from either the 50s or the 60s. And it was amazing to me because all of the ads for all of the locations, like there's an ad for a mall and there was an ad for a, you know, I don't know, new restaurant or something. And almost all of the ads included the terms clean and bright. Clean and bright, right? When was the last time you saw a location in America advertising their cleanliness and brightness, right? We take it for granted. Everywhere we go is clean and bright. It's wonderful. It's amazing. It's sparkly and beautiful. It was like, as you know, that was a selling point in the 50s and 60s is like, hey, everywhere you go is dingy and kind of dirty, but like we have a nice new clean and bright place to come see. Like the idea of the comfort level that we live in, it's like not that old. It's really not that old. So anyway, so you get all these developments in like the 40s, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, frees up women quite a bit. They're no longer, you know, tied to the household by necessity because of all of these, you know, wonderful inventions. It gives, you know, frees up time for women. Women are volunteering. Women are, you know, creating charity organizations, not so much in the professional world, but they are in the professional world as well. Certain women, like extraordinary ones, make their way into the corporate structure and are able to exist. There's no law against it in America. It just doesn't happen that much. But culturally, that starts to change. And again, there was no barrier to that. It's not like, you know, I mean, you had the suffragettes in like the, you know, 1910s. There was some resistance to that. Probably should have been more, to be honest with you. But they got their way. You know, it's not like there was a big, you know, battle over that. I mean, they just sort of made some noise and we said, okay, fine. You know, it's all right. Enough already. Obviously, there's always going to be a little bit of pushback for big, major, you know, universal societal changes like that. But that's what we do. But we absorb those. But we change things to comport with the new reality. And that's fine. That's good. That's progress. That's how you move forward. That's how you innovate. But then you get people who come in and they go, it's not happening fast enough. They take this little bit of discomfort that's developed of women going, you know, I should be able to get a job like a man. You know, I'm just as qualified as that guy. Why am I not getting the job? There's a little discomfort there. And the society's changing, but it's changing incrementally and it's changing gradually and it's changing naturally until somebody comes along and goes, it's not happening fast enough. They take advantage of that discomfort, take advantage of that vulnerability. And they say what you need to be doing is burning your bras and taking the pill and rejecting everything about the patriarchy, and it devolves into first, second, now third wave feminism, which has destroyed everything. And I forgot about these stories. But there are two really good. Oh man, I don't know where it is. Okay, here it is under my other stack. I'm glad I brought this up. This is where feminism has gotten to at this point. You gotta love this. This was posted by Chris Williamson at Chris Will X on X. He says, C.S. Lewis, the feminist, because C.S. Lewis has this quote, the homemaker is the ultimate career. All other careers exist for one purpose only, and that is to support the ultimate career. Homemaking, right? The mother, the homemaker. It's the ultimate career. All other careers exist for one purpose only, and that is to support homemakers. They think this makes them a feminist. This is the antithesis of modern feminism. This is Satan to feminism's God. What are you talking about? You think this is feminism? He's saying staying home and being a stay-at-home mother is the ultimate career and is what everybody should aspire to and is, at the end of the day, the only career that really matters. But you think this is feminism? Like, you're an idiot. You're off the rails. This is where it's gotten to. And I have another example also from today. 8 weeks of maternity leave isn't enough. Neither is 3 months, 6 months, or even a year. Attachment theory research shows that babies need their primary caregiver, most often mom, far longer than a few months, ideally for the first 3 years. Longer maternity leave leads to better mother-infant interactions, which results in more secure attachment at 24 months. Babies are so sensitive that even any baby mother separation for more than a week under the age of 2 has been shown to predict higher child negativity at age 3 and higher aggression at both age 3 and age 5. You can never convince me anything about women working corporate jobs is natural. So you know what the obvious conclusion of that is that last sentence. Women working corporate jobs is not natural. So they've gone from you have to let women in the workplace to you have to let women in the workplace, but they require maternity leave, to that maternity leave should be 3 years because babies who grow up without their mothers as constant companions suffer mental and physical and, you know, spiritual consequences later down the line. How about we just roll it back? How about we just undo all of this crap? Because obviously, and science proves it out every time it's tested, the traditional Western nuclear family is the best construction for raising a child, the best way for a society to produce healthy, productive, law-abiding, and happy people. And so feminists have spent 60 years tearing that down only to rediscover it and want to weirdly implement this half, you know, fixture where we're celebrating stay-at-home mothers while also trying to have them be corporate worker bees. It doesn't work, y'all. So whether it's, you know, race or feminism or anything else, it's because our countries are liberal. It's because our countries are open to changing and evolving and, you know, contending with new realities as they arrive. It opens us up to bad people taking advantage of the discomfort that that causes and, you know, basically screwing up the response. Whereas before, if we had allowed the process of women's liberation to take, you know, process and incrementally be allowed to happen, everything would probably be fine. Same thing with race. You know, black people were moving out of black neighborhoods. They were starting their own neighborhoods. You know, there was some friction. Black people were going, hey, we should be fully fledged citizens. We need to get rid of some of these Jim Crow laws that make us second class citizens. We've earned it. We've shown that we're capable. And in come the people going, what you need is the government subsidies. And what you need is this. And what you need is that. And they take advantage of what is a natural, normal process of development of a liberal country. And they weaponize it and they destroy it. And they take that vulnerability and they put a knife through it. And that's what happens over and over and over. So I think that does go to explain sort of how we got to where we are now. It is liberalism at the end of the day that's opened us up to all of this. I'm so stupid. I'm just... The whole reason I played that parade at the beginning was to tell you about our Memorial Day sale. I didn't even tell you about our Memorial Day sale. I wanted to play the 1976 parade. And then I was going to say that was a Memorial Day parade, and now we have a Memorial Day sale at the Alex Jones. Yeah, I think I've laid out a pretty complete argument as to like how we got to where we are now. But I want to go to clip number 25 here. This is Konstantin Kissin, who's like really great half the time and really incoherent the other half. He's a funny character to me, but he's completely right about what he says here about the way Europeans, English people in particular, have been demonized unfairly. And that's a very nice way of putting it. Here's Konstantin Kissin.
We've spent a very long time now being afraid to say something that we should say, which is the accusation that we are the most intolerant or places that are defined by racism and slavery and all of this other stuff, is not just false. It's the exact inversion of the truth. It's the exact inversion of the truth. It's the exact opposite of the truth. And I debate these people all the time, right? I say to them, whether it's, you know, TV or whatever, and I say to them, look, even behind closed doors, I will say this to people, you're a black woman, or you're a this, or you're a that. where would you rather live than in Britain or Canada or America or Australia or New Zealand, like five countries? I'm sure I've forgotten some. But it's not many countries, and they're all Western countries, right? So if you would rather live somewhere else, name me, is it China, is it Russia, is it Japan? Where are these beautiful places full of tolerance and all of this? We are the best at the very thing that we are being accused of being terrible at. The same with slavery. Slavery existed in the entire world, and then the West ended it.
Well, this country.
This country specifically, right?
Voluntarily.
Voluntarily.
Without bloodshed. Well,
right?
A lot of pain for the slaves, but without the bloodshed of the Civil War.
That doesn't mean that slavery is...
That America had.
Is defendable, but what is... That's not what you have to defend. The accusation should be, why were you the first empire to end slavery, if there's an accusation to be made? If there's an inquiry to be made, that's the question we should be asking. Why was this country and its ideas and a place where this novel realization that slavery is wrong, something that prior to that, basically all human beings treated as kind of like, you know, part of life, right? Like you keep your dog in a kennel, you keep people you've conquered in war in bondage. That's what everybody thought.
I don't know if you see the connection there, right? He almost is approaching this as if there's something ironic or hypocritical about this almost. It actually makes perfect sense. Of course, the countries that pioneered human rights, that pioneered the destruction of slavery, that created the world as we know it with all of its tolerance and vulnerabilities, of course they're the ones that are going to be vulnerable then to exploitation and lies and manipulation. It actually makes perfect sense. The thing we need to do is be able to retain those values that truly are the thing that set us apart and make us different and frankly better than other cultures. Western culture is better because it is self-sacrificial, because it is open to negotiation, because it's not rigid and hard-lined and brutal and dog-eat-dog. We rose above that. We created something better. And of course, it's going to get torn down. People are going to want to tear it down. It doesn't have to get torn down. It gets torn down because we have gone too far in that direction. We have to maintain those values while also ruthlessly protecting them against encroachment. We have to protect those values in totality, in a comprehensive and holistic way that says we're protecting free speech and we're keeping people out who don't want to protect free speech and who don't value free speech. We're gonna arm ourselves because we're going to maintain a civilization that's capable of being armed because its people are intelligent and responsible. You can't have one without the other, and you can't have endless giving and endless empathy for other people if you don't have empathy for yourself and if you don't care about yourself. This is suicidal. You can do it the other way. You can only care about yourself and you'll be fine. But then you'll be like everybody else. We want to care about everybody else. But in order to do that, we have to protect ourselves and value ourselves and defend ourselves. Shouldn't be that hard. But it is almost, it's inevitable. It's our greatest strength is our greatest weakness. Doesn't have to be. We can stand up for ourselves. It's not hard. Please do support us at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. Like I meant to tell you last hour, it is Memorial Day on Monday. Memorial Day is coming up. And that was the whole reason I was playing that video. To say, yes, we have fallen very far, but it wasn't that long ago that we lived in a world that looked like a Norman Rockwell painting. And all the people that tell you that was really just cover for some deep sickness that everybody was hiding, nope, it was free, it was happy, it was prosperous, everybody got along for the most part. Sure, there was some strife here or there, some legacies of some outdated policies or laws that had to be changed, but to go from that to where we are now took deliberate, orchestrated destruction. It didn't just happen, right? We are under attack, and we've been under attack, and until we realize that, wake up and fight back, we're going to continue to lose. And winning is the only thing that matters at the end of the day, because we're talking about struggle for survival. And yes, we have a reason to live, which is we are unique and, you know, it's not just the physical survival, but the survival of the ideas and the continuity of the historical sort of rocket ship that we're all temporary passengers on. But at the end of the day, if we don't recognize the threat and fight back against it, we're going to succumb to it. And it is actually a choice that we're making. We have made the choice to fight back. We have gone all in on humanity. I believe that we do have the capability to wake up and rub the sleep out of our eyes and realize that, like Gulliver, we are tied down on a beach somewhere by a bunch of Lilliputians that would be very easy to defeat if we just felt like it, if we had the will, if we had the strength of character or, you know, future vision to understand where we're going and how to, you know, flip the switch and change the tracks. I think we could do it pretty easily. We are very much like Gulliver. I've been using that metaphor forever. That, like, okay, now we're like, we've woken up. I still feel like we're in the process where, like, we are Gulliver on the beach, strapped down. We're awake now. Most people are awake, and most people are looking around going, oh, these are ropes tying me down. Oh, I see Lilliputians crawling around everywhere. We should really do something. And it's like, yeah, we should stand up. Right. You're Gulliver. The things holding you down are in your mind. Those ropes are not strong enough to hold you. Actually, you can stand up. You can stand up whenever you want, and you can crush the Lilliputians under your feet. But they're telling you it's mean to do that. So you're not. That's what we have to get over. We really are at war with ourselves in a lot of ways. And we will continue to be. But no matter what, no matter how badly things have gone in the very recent past because of the attack that we have failed to defend ourselves from, the people that actually did go out and fight for this country deserve all the praise in the world. And this is something that you really have to understand. And I see this with people who are veterans, people in my family, who they wake up to the reality of how the world works and they go, I used to be so proud of my service. Now I realize I was working for the evil empire. I realized I was serving Satan. I didn't even know it. And I always have to say to them, like, you cannot feel bad about that. You really can't. Your motivation is what matters. And your, you know, what you did, whether it was, you know, serving in Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere, like, you weren't going there for money, right? Like, you weren't going there because you wanted to sell the poppy, you know, with the CIA, were you? I mean, if you were one of those guys, all right, maybe we'll have a problem. But if you're just the boots on the ground, if you're the grunt who sent there without your permission, without your say-so, you signed up to do the right thing, to maybe carry on a family tradition of being in the Army, that's an honorable thing. It's a good thing. And that spirit needs to be maintained. You should never feel bad about that. You should feel taken advantage of. I would say that, yeah, that's something you can definitely feel. I think you should definitely feel screwed over and taken advantage of and, you know, angry at the people that did this to you. But for anybody that feels guilt, or on the other side, anybody, the young people I'm talking about who think, you know, 1776, who cares? America's fallen. No, you're dumb. No, you are disrespectful and selfish, not recognizing the sacrifices of the people that came before you. So we're going to honor those sacrifices and understand that nobody goes to spend their life on some beach in Europe or desert in the Middle East out of anything other than, you know, honorable and respectable motivation. So we'll reclaim it. You know, we can't take your eye off the prize. You disconnect from the founding fathers. You disconnect from the foundational, primordial morals of this country, and you're out to sea. You're basically going to end up trying to create some weird new form of communism that's just going to be like every other form of communism. It doesn't make any sense. No, we have the blueprint. We know the system that works. It's called the Republic. We just have to defend better against the encroachment of democracy, the encroachment of tolerance of things that are intolerable, the encroachment of manipulation and subversion and media control destroying people's minds. You have to maintain it. You have to be worthy of it. Liberty is not a license to do anything. It's an obligation to do the right thing. And until we reclaim that mindset, then it will be hopeless. But it's not hopeless. America is still unbelievably powerful, unbelievably prosperous, and unbelievably hard to kill, folks. Remember, the enemy is never vanquished until they believe themselves so. And you are never vanquished until you willingly submit. We will never submit. We have gone all in on this. All that we ask from you is you support us at thealexjonesstore.com. You're going to get sick of me talking about how much I like this wallet. But what can I say? It's a damn fine wallet. It really is a nice wallet. And it's going to sell out, by the way. I probably shouldn't even be plugging this because by the time you see it, it might not even be there. If you want one of these, you got to go now. You got to get one today. By the time Memorial Day itself rolls around on Monday, probably not going to be any more available at current rates. And by the way, they're still on sale on discount with they're the new RFID Freedom Shield wallets at thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And I'm telling you, for the graduate in your life, for a gift or for yourself, I really love this. I really do love this wallet. And there's just something about it. You know, like a really good product. Like Apple was really good at this. The tactile feel that it, you know, you can't just have a functional phone. It's got to feel good. It's got to give you a dopamine rush when you hold it in your hand. You know, that's what this wallet does to me. I seriously, I'm just like blown away by its craftsmanship. It's really nice. I cut down a few of my cards so it's even slimmer than it was. Somebody was asking me on X yesterday about holding cash. It has a strap in the back for cash and it can hold up to 25 bills, it says. I don't have any cash on me right now. I usually do, but not today. So I can't tell you from personal experience, but yeah, I'll probably slip it back there. I might even put a money clip on the back. I might customize it a little bit with a money clip on the back, but it has a strap for cash back here. And then of course you pull up the cards like this. It's got a real nice, like smooth function. It feels good to use and it feels well-made and high quality. And it's on sale now at thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Get yours today before they sell out. They'll be gone this weekend at current rates. And the Memorial Day sale is a great time to do it. Deals are already marked down and now you're getting an extra 25% stacked on top. It's time to load up. This is a Memorial Day sale. It will end on Monday. The buy one, get one BOGO SUPS sale has been extended to Monday as well. T3 trifecta iodine tincture is buy one, get one free, as is the methylene blue tincture. Buy one, get one free, two of our best-selling products. Anyway, you can get one, buy one, get one free, and get an additional 25% off. Plus, the new Freedom Shield wallet is on sale for almost half price for everybody, but a fully, you know, $40 discount if you're a VIP member. These things sell for $70 in stores. You can get one today for $49 on thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. VIPs get it for $39.20. It always pays to be a VIP member. If you sign up to be a VIP member, or well, if you are a VIP member, you get $10 every month to spend on the store. So if you sign up to be a VIP member today, you're going to get 10 bucks. You're getting an extra 10 bucks off the wallet. You're basically getting this wallet for like 20 bucks total, more or less, something like that. There are lots of ways to save. Now's the time to do it. Memorial Day sale, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. All right. I got some videos, folks. Boy, do I have some videos for you. Some of them I don't even look forward to playing. I've got a lot of videos about the flotilla, about the gods of flotilla. Maybe it's just because it's Friday. I don't know. You get to the end of the week and it's like, do we really have to talk about how Israel tortures activists? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. It's my job. I'll do it. We have to face this stuff head on. So we'll get to a video about that. But before we do, I want to go to this video. Let's have a little fun first, shall we? Is it fun? I don't know. Laughing at the incompetence that is destroying your country. Whatever. It's the best we got. It's the best we got at this point. So we're going to enjoy it. We're going to go to, I just saw it. You know the video I'm talking about? 51. This is the mayor of Chicago, Mayor Johnson, who keeps getting in hot water over the fact that he has like a 150-person bodyguard unit composed of what should be like beat cops, like regular cops, but instead they're assigned to protecting him and him alone at a time when Chicago is beset by violent crime, violent gangs randomly attacking people, murders just at an astronomical level, and activists reversing a lot of the policies that were put into place to make the city safer, things like the shot detector, where it told you where gunshots were before people had to call 911. They took that away because all of the gunshots were happening in black and brown neighborhoods. Here's Mayor Johnson today, mayor of Chicago, talking about what police have to deal with there in Chicago. Let's watch.
Let me be absolutely clear. Remember when we had multiple arrests at a gathering, and then another gathering happened the following week? If we believe that we can arrest our way towards safety, we're wrong. We ask police officers to do too much.
So, what happened to me this morning was I was tying my tie, getting dressed, and I was scrolling through videos on X, and that video popped up, and it popped up while I was tying my tie, and so it looped like three or four times. Because it'll loop if you don't touch anything. And so I watched it like three or four times, heard it like three or four times, and it just sunk in every time. What the hell is this guy talking about? Every sentence of that is like a masterclass in absurdity. Everything that man just said is worthy of investigation. Okay? It was a short clip. Only about, you know, five or six sentences. But my God. My God. Can we go through it sentence by sentence? Let's play that again and just pause it after. We're going to go step by step here. Okay? So here's Mayor Johnson. Let's dissect this like we need to. Let's watch.
Let me be absolutely clear. Remember when we had multiple arrests at a gathering, and then another gathering happened the following week? If we believe that we can arrest our way towards safety, we're wrong.
All right, we got to pause. See, I should have paused it earlier. We had multiple arrests at a gathering. All right, so off the bat, he's downplaying what's actually happening, these teen takeovers that look like a scene out of Mad Max or God only knows, the rave scene from The Matrix. It's just like, because it's always at night and it's usually lit by fire. And so maybe it looks more like, I don't know, a depiction from a Conan the Barbarian story where he's going down the Congo or something. But it's just, it's fire and like, dancing and just like cars being flipped. It's chaos. All right. So on the first off, the gathering, a youth gathering where multiple people are arrested. Probably not as many as there should have been. Then he says that happened 1 week, and then the next week there's another one. That's too much. That's too much for the police to handle. So what the hell are you talking about? Two events a week apart? In the second biggest city in the entire United States, or third biggest city in the entire United States, you can't handle two events in 2 weeks? What the hell are you talking about, sir? They just say this stuff, and it just in one ear and out the other. But if you really think about it, this is the thing. When it plays over and over, you're like, wait, what? An event happened last week, and then happened this week, and you're saying this is too much. What? It's like, the fire department. I mean, there was a fire on Saturday, and what happened a week later? Another fire. This is, what are we supposed to do? Put out every fire? It's like, yeah, that's not that much. What are you talking about? So the teen gathering that ended in multiple arrests happened again. And gosh, wouldn't you know it, it's just that's too much. Two times in 2 weeks, that's too much to deal with. Okay, let's keep going.
Let me be absolutely clear. Remember when we had multiple arrests at a gathering? And then another gathering happened the following week. If we believe that we can arrest our way towards safety, we're wrong.
Let's pause it there. If we believe we can arrest our way to safety, we're wrong. You want to back that up with literally anything? You want to explain why you think that's the case? I don't understand. Are you saying because multiple people were arrested the first time, the fact that it happened again means that those first arrests didn't matter? Is that what you think? Because that's a crazy way to think. That's crazy. I think that's what he's saying, though, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's saying you can't arrest your way out of this because there was a teen takeover, we arrested a couple of them, and then they did it again the next week. So we're throwing our hands up. Doesn't work. Arresting people doesn't work. Let's try it. Let's give it a try. Why don't you try arresting people? Why don't you try arresting more people? And let's see if the crime rate goes down. Because the way he's sort of phrasing it is almost as if they arrested everybody from the teen takeover. And then the next week, there was just another team takeover, and the arrest like didn't matter. I bet they arrested like 10 people out of the 400 that were there. And he's like, "Well, we can't you know do anything about it. What are we supposed to do?" Okay, so far we've got, hey, two events in 2 weeks. You're asking too much of the Chicago Police Department. Okay. Also, we cannot arrest our way out of this, even though we haven't tried, and the more lenient we are, the worse crime gets on a correlated basis, right? The less we arrest people, the more lenient we are, the more crime rate goes up, the murder rate goes up, absolutely everything goes up. So again, he just says, you know, the clip's like 20 seconds long, he says a couple things, makes sense to the people there. Other people will go, well, wait, you can't arrest your way out of a problem. That's wrong, and it is on the face of it. But every single part of every sentence is like, what the hell is this guy talking about? It's why democracy is wrong. This clip is why democracy is wrong and bad and evil, actually. This clip explains it all. Because you can have dumb people leading other dumb people saying things that just don't make any sense on the face of it. The more you look into it, the less sense it makes. But a bunch of people are sitting up there thinking he's saying something smart and incisive and poignant. He's not. He's not. He is saying nonsense. Replace police with firefighters. It makes sense how little sense it makes. Firefighters are overwhelmed. Y'all remember that big building fire last week? Well, there's another one this week. Spraying water on fires doesn't help. Okay, sure, you can spray water on one fire and maybe it gets put out, but that's not stopping another fire starting next week, is it? So why are we spraying water at the end of the day? That's what he's saying. Are you getting why I'm harping on this? Like, what? You might as well be saying spraying water on fire doesn't work because there's just going to be another fire next week. Okay, great. We're not done. We're two sentences in. Let's keep going. Brandon Johnson, please continue.
Let me be absolutely clear. Remember when we had multiple arrests at a gathering, and then another gathering happened the following week? If we believe that we can arrest our way towards safety, we're wrong. We ask police officers to do too much.
Arresting people, their jobs. Again, just replace the word police with the word firefighter and replace the word crime with the word fire. And it should be how ridiculous this is. The fact that people don't see that as ridiculous is really an indictment of our entire system and the democracy that undergirds it. You're asking police to do too much. Hey, asking McDonald's to make cheeseburgers, what are you, crazy? Asking firefighters to spray water on fires, it's too much. They can't handle it. Okay? It's too much. I think you can arrest your way out of it. I think we've seen that from Nayib Bukele. I think anybody saying otherwise is a criminal and themselves should be arrested. I think if we arrest enough people like Brandon Johnson, we don't have to arrest everybody else. They'll all get arrested anyway because it's a deliberate program of leniency that's allowing the chaos to continue. Let's go to clip 56 now. This is a video I referenced earlier with Alex. A woman who was a Black Lives Matter activist got her reward. Let's watch.
40 seconds after she walks in, a man jogs up to the door. The young woman you're watching is walking back to her own apartment building. It's just after 10:30 at night. She's coming home from a festival downtown. She's smiling. She's relaxed. Watch her glance behind her. She doesn't know she was followed. 40 seconds after she walks in, a man jogs up to the door. He looks through the glass. He sees her on the couch inside. He waves to get her attention. They talk for less than a minute. Then she opens the door and lets him in. She would never come out alive. Her name is Paula LaPere. She's 26 years old.
You see, I had my life entirely mapped out. A blueprint for how I was going to make a change in the world.
There's a dead body on the rooftop of 306 West Franklin.
Tell me exactly what happened, Kevin.
We filed a missing person report for my friend and boss this morning, and we just checked the rooftop of the building. I'm looking at her.
Okay, is she awake?
Is she, no.
Is she breathing?
No.
Please tell me why does it look like she's dead?
I don't want to get too close. She's...
You got to get close to Kevin. Why does it look like she's dead? Come on, Kevin, you got this.
Her face is, she looks like she's been dead for a couple of days, and she's partly naked. I think she was f***ing killed.
I'm sending you help, Kevin.
All right. This was posted by Brandon Tatum at The Officer Tatum. Pava LaPere, a social justice warrior and woke CEO, ran EcoMap, a company that stands against systematic racism, bigotry, and police state that criminalizes black bodies. She was beaten to death with a brick by Jason Billingsley, career criminal, registered sex offender. He got early release so the system wouldn't look racist just days before because he'd raped and nearly killed another woman, but he was black, so it was okay. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. The Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com, alexjoneslive.com. Share that link. Got a bunch of exciting stuff today. Apparently, the debate that I did, that we did, me and Alex Stein and Owen Schroyer debated boomers, millennials versus boomers, the generational divide. Apparently, it's now out. Brandon Straka just texted me saying it's out, so we're going to pull in a trailer for that here. I'm very excited. Excited to see how we did. It feels like a long time ago now. Took a while to get out, but we've been waiting with bated breath. So very excited about that. We'll show you that trailer here in just a second. Also, Off Limits News with NXR Studios. If you're watching the Alex Jones Show today, you saw Joel Webbin. He, of course, is the head of NXR Studios, announced, as we did here, the Christ is King America After Trump conference that we'll be holding in Irving Convention Center in Dallas, Texas, November 12th through 14th, 2026. And you can go to newchristianright.com/conference if you want to get tickets to that. And check out Off Limits News on NXR Studios, on NXR Studios on X and YouTube. One of little side ventures I was very honored for Pastor Webbin to invite me to do. Very exciting stuff. Of course, Alex Stein will be there, Calvin Robinson, Dale Partridge. Very exciting stuff. James Fishback, J.P. Sears, Joel Webbin, Joshua Hames. Very exciting stuff. That'll be happening in November. And Offlands News out today, and the Boomers versus Millennial debate out today. I haven't actually seen this trailer. I'm excited to find out how it's being presented. But this was a debate that I did with Alex Stein and Owen Schroyer, us three versus three boomers who we got along with swimmingly, amazingly. We were aligned like, you know, peas in a pod till the topic of Iran came up, when all of a sudden things got a little crazy. Let's watch.
Okay, Boomer, here we go again. Okay, Boomer, you believe the official narrative of 9/11. It's like, okay, you believe the official moon landing. It's just like, oh my gosh, okay, Boomer, oh. We're sick of this same policy.
Which policy are you talking about that you're sick of?
Tonight, we're going to tell the truth. There is a deep and significant fracture inside the right, and it's getting worse.
We tried it your way, and all it's done is caused the problem.
Ranting online is not going to solve the problem.
It's generational.
Judeo-Christian values, lessons of World War II.
Judeo-Christian values, just please toss that out of the ring. And as far as World War II is concerned, are we ever going to move on?
All of these issues that you're bitching about have been fought time and time and time again.
That type of response is what's driving people to the left.
Well, they came in illegally, but they're good people and they're working now on farms.
Trump betrayed his base, he betrayed his voters, and he did not follow through, and he was not conservative at all. And we thought Trump was going to be different.
So did we. And Trump was supposed to be the leader of America first.
You think Jeffrey Epstein killed himself?
Of course not.
Boomers for the win.
You are about to inherit a very messy world.
Yes, sir.
And if you're not with us,
it's not going to be recoverable.
Our foreign policy is controlled by a foreign country that blackmails and buys our politicians in order to do it.
Israel does not control our foreign policy.
Trump just said it.
He did not say that was the reason.
Do you think we're anti-Semites?
Getting a little bit of a feel.
The reason why we're frustrated with this war in Iran is because they lied about weapons of mass destruction after 2001.
It's not true.
That is absolutely not true. This is where we're going to have a huge disconnect.
Stuck on this whole hate Muslims train that you can't even see what's happening right in front of your damn faces.
That is totally effing insane.
$5 trillion plus have been spilled in the Middle East because of it, and tens of thousands of American lives have died in the Middle East because of it, and our generation is saying we are done.
They've screwed up the Middle East, and now they're screwing up Europe.
Have you ever considered you might be falling for fake news?
Rubbish.
The Great MAGA Divide. Walk away at Real Walk Away on YouTube, streaming on X and Facebook, 7 p.m. Eastern. So, okay, so that'll be starting in 20 minutes. Okay, so it's not quite out yet, but it'll stream in 20 minutes. Very exciting stuff. Follow Brandon Straka and the Walk Away movement. Oh, May 27th. Okay, I'm all wonky then. I thought he was saying it was out. All right, Wednesday, May. Okay, so that was just the trailer. Okay, so they're hyping it up. All right, I'm catching on here. Okay, Wednesday, May 27th, 7 p.m. Sorry, the big bold letters in the middle. That's what I missed. The Great MAGA Divide, Boomers vs. Millennials, Wednesday, May 27th, 7 p.m. Okay, so the trailer's out now, but you can watch it streaming on X, Facebook, and YouTube next Wednesday. That's very exciting. Trailer was a little low and heavy, have to be honest with you. He was the one yelling at them the most, so I guess that makes sense. It's pretty good zingers, too, I'll have you know. It's a little more subtle in my delivery, you might say. I'm very excited. That was very well done. It's obvious why it's taken a while to come out, because they've been working on it, and it shows. I'm very excited about that. There you go. Baby Boomers vs. Millennials. Go check that out. Share the trailer and tune in on Wednesday. Maybe we'll do a live stream of it. Maybe we'll watch along. That could be fun. Should we talk about Israel? Should we talk about the Gaza flotilla? Now, I got lots of videos of the flotilla survivors making statements, and it was really a kind of unique instance, because it's like the United Nations of victims. It's like you got a video of a guy in Italy speaking Italian, you got a Japanese woman and an article about her, so all of these protesters, these activists who were on their way towards Gaza but were still in international waters, had not committed any crimes, had no weapons, had no anything. They were kidnapped by Israel illegally in international waters, tortured by them, and then released back to their home countries. And so, again, to me, the important thing to understand, well, there's a couple of important things to understand. One is that it's not about the Palestinians, it's not about the Arabs. They treat Europeans in exactly the same way they treat Palestinians, they treat Christians in exactly the same way they treat Muslims. From the point of view of Israel, there is Israel and there is everybody else. You are a part of everybody else if you're not a part of Israel. It's actually not that complicated, but it shows the chutzpah, it shows the confidence, it shows the ability that they have, that they can capture people from, I believe, 40 different countries and know that they're not going to suffer consequence from any of them. Usually, doing this to a single person from a foreign country would cause problems. If an American is, you know, illegally arrested, not committing any crimes, like, the American government will make a stink about it. They'll make a deal about it. They'll go and talk to the country and try to get you out. I mean, it's, you know, sort of the great thing about being an American is being a member of a club that is the most powerful in the world and whose government can move heaven and earth whenever it wants. Ostensibly, that should be our, you know, the benefit of our birth. That should be our right as Americans to have that power exercised at a moment's notice anywhere in the world for us. That rarely ever happens. But if you get a circumstance where you know, an American is illegally arrested, America will go out of its way to try to get you out, especially if it's in a corrupt or, you know, less than functioning place. They'll do that. And any country would. And so even doing that to one person or one nationality would be a big risk. Israel doesn't blink about doing it to 40 different nations, knowing that none of those 40 nations are going to lift a finger to do anything about it. They should be banding together and everybody doing something about it. This should be a major wake-up call for European nations and their governments and their people. And it should, you know, they should make Israel pay, and Israel should regret this. They should, you know, a couple months from now be looking around going, why did we ever stop that flotilla? We're such idiots. It would have been such a small price to pay. They could have brought food, had their stupid PR. Instead, we've been cut off from supplies. We're, you know, being cornered by our enemies. Like, this should, this demands a response. Doesn't just warrant, it demands a response from all of these different governments. And let's go to, I want to go to first the news report about it. Is that, well, we got to come, oh man, there's so many of these. Let's go to clip 32 now. We can start with that one. Go ahead.
I was illegally kidnapped by Israel, like 425 other people. We all were in detention, and they put handcuffs on my hands and on my feet. They dragged me, and when I couldn't walk anymore, they dragged me on the ground. They hit me. They hurt all of us a lot. They put the handcuffs so tight that my hands at some point lost feeling, and they laughed all the time. These people were super sadistic. They abused us, they mistreated and hit us, and they took pictures of us, they took off my shirt, and then they just kept on mistreating us all night long. My message to the world is shame on you, shame on all of you, shame on everyone who is silent about this, shame on every government that keeps on trading like Israel, including my own government. They keep on trading with Israel. Israel is the genocide. My government is complicit. The whole of Europe is complicit. The whole world is complicit. So my message to all governments is shame on you, and to all people is please stand up. Stand up and make noise for Palestine, for all genocides around the world, because if we don't do it, no one else will do it. Like, if we don't go in the flotilla, the governments won't solve it. No one will solve it. Only the people can solve.
Like, I don't, you know, I don't care if she's a leftist hippie. I really don't. That's what I respect. I respect that fight. I respect that attitude. I respect that unwillingness to get along, to go along, or to expect somebody else to do it. You have to do it. And even if you pay the price for it, even if you're hurt, even if you're injured, you go out and do it again because it's the right thing to do. And because this type of evil can only persist when good people do nothing. So God bless that woman and everybody involved in this flotilla. They were doing the right thing. They were going to try to bring supplies, humanitarian supplies, food and medicine and supplies to people who are being deliberately starved and continuously bombed by a much more powerful, much more advanced genocidal state, who at this point is openly genocidal. We had the story earlier this week. I'm not sure if I presented it, but an official order has gone out on it, you know, the Israeli government stationery ordering ethnic cleansing of large amounts of Lebanon and Gaza. They've already encroached on Gaza and made this yellow line. They're building a wall there. They're violating ceasefire agreements there. They're acting with total impunity and vindictiveness. And they are arresting and torturing European Christians in international waters for the crime of being symbolically against their genocide. Do you understand? These people didn't hurt anybody. And I even saw some people, you know, I think the closest thing you could possibly get to justification for this was they're terrorist supporters, and that's what you get. Which, you know, incumbent in that, like within that statement is the tacit admission that you think all Palestinians are terrorists, including the children and the women and the old people who've never heard a fly and never done anything to anybody, which you're evil. Like, if you believe that, then you're evil. If you believe little children are terrorists in waiting that deserve to be killed or starved to death or deprived medicine as they live in rat-infested, flea-infested, disease-ridden tent cities that are still being bombed. There was a bombing in the refugee camp of Gaza today. The big video went viral about it. This huge explosion on a tent city for people who have lost everything been constantly driven from place to place, pursued by bombs, beset by sickness and illness and starvation, and occasionally, you know, shot in the back of the head for the crime of existing. And these people got on a boat and started going in their direction. They never even delivered anything. But the intention was enough. The desire to help the starving people, the desire to support the innocent people, is in opposition to Israel's desire to kill them all. Therefore, they can do whatever they want to you. My question is, if they can do this in international waters, could they do it in territorial waters of another country? And I think the answer would have to be yes. If they can do it in the territorial waters of another country, could they do it on land in another sovereign country? I think the answer again is yes. I think the purpose of this and the purpose of so much we've seen throughout the last couple of years of Israeli aggression and irresponsibility in the Middle East is designed to express and inculcate the idea that Israel has not just the right, but the ability and the sovereign immunity to kill anybody it wants, whenever it wants, to abuse anybody it wants, whenever it wants, that it will make videos and publish videos bragging about this, and then they'll grin at you knowing that your country is so paralyzed by fear of them that they'll let them do it, and they'll let them do it to you. Here's a report about this from the BBC, clip 40, just to give you a rundown of exactly the numbers that we're talking about here.
We start with the international outcry over Israel's treatment of protesters against the war in Gaza. A group of more than 400 activists were arrested at a port in southern Israel after the Navy intercepted their flotilla in international waters. Israel has said they've all now been deported.
So, it's a lot of people, but it again shows the confidence of Israel. They didn't try to hide this. They didn't do this in the background and it had to be leaked out. Ben-Gvir posted the video of him walking around while they're all tied with their hands behind the back and their heads on the ground. And I don't know if we can find, there was a smaller video that was a compilation of some of these videos. We could just go to the videos one by one. I was hoping to avoid that just because it's very brutal listening to these. And I also don't know how, you know, confirmed each individual statement is. But when you hear all these people in all these different countries all saying exactly the same thing, it imbues it with a bit of legitimacy. Let's go to clip 17 here. It was called the Global Summoned Flotilla. They say at least 15 cases of sexual assault, including rape, and the people arrested being shot with rubber bullets, again, for having never committed a crime, never invaded Israeli territorial waters, but innocent Europeans who merely oppose what Israel is doing to the Palestinians have been kidnapped and subjected to rape and torture. Let's watch.
So we are clear that Israel was ready to escalate. The IOF were ready to escalate. They didn't need an opportunity. There was a woman that crossed a line that they had said nothing about, and she got shot with a rubber bullet for that fact. They were using any moment they could to use violence, even if it was pulling us from one place to another, trying to force us to fall. If somebody said free Palestine, they were very clear. You use words, we use guns. They said this to us repeatedly. We know that on one of the prison boats, as people were being brought into the open space, they were held in groups of two or three with about five commandos, brutalizing them one by one as people were entered into that container. We know on just one of the boats in one of the sections, there were at least 15 cases of sexual assault that have been reported so far. There were over 30 broken bones, broken clavicles, broken ribs. We have people on their way to the hospital right now needing urgent care that was denied to them by the IOF. Repeatedly, as has happened before, we called for medical attention and they ignored us every time. It is unacceptable. And we need to make sure we are very clear that what we experience was a tiny percentage of what Palestinians in Israeli prisons experience every single day. So if this can be a moment for us to make change, let's make change. Let's join together. Let's hold them to account, because this violence is nothing compared to what they do to our Palestinian comrades. So please, if this can be a lightning rod moment, let it be that. And let us actually, finally change the system and hold Israel to account. Sanction Israel. Boycott, divest, anything and everything that we can do in every corner of the world. People can claim our power. It shows we can make a difference. When people stand up, use every opportunity you get to make a statement, to hold people to account. When we do this, change happens. So please join us. Join us wherever you are and rise up so that we can end this occupation, end this colonialism, end this violence. And free Palestine from the river to the sea.
There you go. Again, I do not disagree. Gaza flotilla activists allege abuse, sexual assault, and Israeli detention. Organizers of the Gaza-bound aid flotilla say freed foreign activists were abducted from international waters, faced abuse while in Israeli detention, including at least 15 reporting incidents of sexual assault or rape. The Global Summoned Flotilla organizer added in a statement on Facebook on Friday that several activists were hospitalized with injuries a day after hundreds were deported from Israel. So again, you know, the thing is, they could have stopped this and not raped them, right? Couldn't they have done that? Couldn't they have simply turned them away, the very worst, arrested and deported them? They knew there was a media attention on this. And if there wasn't before, they published the videos, they guaranteed it. So just understand, they aren't ashamed. They aren't sorry. They aren't embarrassed. They don't regret it. They did it on purpose. They did it so everybody could see. They did it to teach you a lesson. Are you going to learn that lesson? Or are you going to learn the opposite lesson? The lesson they want you to learn is that they're all powerful, they can abuse you at will, and your countries won't do anything about it. The lesson you should be learning is that that's because our countries are taken over by Israeli sympathizers, and until we solve that problem, they will have freedom of action beyond what is right. They will be able to torture and abuse anybody they want when our leadership is too cowardly, controlled, and slavish to oppose them. It's not coming from the government. The solution to this is not coming from the government. And the only response to this should be another flotilla, and then another flotilla, and then another flotilla. And if it happens again, how about armed flotillas? That's the only response. We should be pressuring our governments to be doing something about this. The problem is they'll say stuff, but they won't do stuff. They'll say things, they won't do things. Rhetoric doesn't matter. Language doesn't matter. Not when it comes to stuff like this. Like, I think Frederick Merz, I think, said something about, he's talking about the West Bank. Settler violence in the West Bank is at unprecedented levels. Together with the United Kingdom, France, and Italy, we call on the government of Israel to end its expansion of settlement for a comprehensive and just peace based on a two-state solution. And Israel said, okay, sure. They said, oh, yeah, we'll do that. Guys, we hadn't asked nicely before yet. Duh. We should have asked. They didn't know. They just didn't know that they aren't supposed to be doing this. Guys, have you tried calling on them? Have you tried calling on Israel? Guys, have you called on Israel to stop being inhuman demons and viciously murdering everybody who opposes them? Have you asked them nicely to stop yet? This is like almost worse than nothing. That's where we're at this point. I've spent God only knows how many hours talking about the West Bank, talking about settler violence. You'd think I'd be happy about this. You'd think I'd be celebrating Frederick Merz, Chancellor of Germany, sounding off about this very real, very horrifying practice of Israel. This doesn't matter, though. This doesn't do anything. This doesn't affect anything. This doesn't change anything. This doesn't sway the needle a millimeter. They don't care. Okay? Are we going to learn this lesson? When are we going to learn this lesson? They don't care. It really, I mean, dodo birds. That's all I see is a bunch of dodo birds who are like, we sent an official letter to the hunters to not kill us. Oh, did you? How'd that work out for you? Did they listen? They're not going to listen until you make them listen. Even then, they're not going to listen. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they say. It doesn't matter what they want. It doesn't matter if they're willing to go along. They're going to do it till somebody stops them from doing it. It really is that simple. Of course, the IDF is, you know, trying to distance themselves from Ben-Gavir, but he's your soul. So there's no separating from Ben-Gavir. He is your soul and your heart and your everything. So embrace it or reject it. The choice is yours. Choose wisely.